All right, so the pictures are sort of out of order. I don't really know why, just sort of what had happened. And I had them in chronological order and was going to tell you what we did. So I'll sort of just go without the pictures, and you can look at them as they come up. So when we got to the boot camp in Florida, which is where all the teams were before they set off to their various places, we had a lot of fun running the obstacle course. It was one of the big things in learning teamwork. And we slept in tents. Oop, that's the big top, and there are the tents that we slept in. And it was nice in 100 degrees with 70% humidity in Florida. It was not what any of us were looking forward to. We were all looking forward to Zambia, which it was winter there. So we had fun with that. There was about 1,000 people there, 1,000 kids going all around the world. And that was sort of, it was an interesting experience. You know, don't really want to go back after it. It was a lot of mosquitoes, a lot of other things you just couldn't deal with. The time crunch was crazy. You had to go here to there, and you had 5 minutes to run a mile from class to class. So it was kind of aggravating that way. So we were all happy when we, there's the plane, got to Zambia. And when we got to Zambia, we did a lot of traveling. You can see pictures of us in the bus and in the truck. And it was different from traveling here because your truck doesn't, it's a truck, and it might not go when you get in. It was we had to push start it for the last 2 weeks because just wouldn't, for some reason, start. It had something to do with the starter, I'm not sure. And then the bus had 32 seats in it, and there were 34 of us, so, and the two teams that went to Zambia, so that was fun. And we all had carry-ons with us, too, so it was a tight squeeze. But we all made it and made it to the, that's the bus with 34 people in it. So it was fun. We had a lot of fun traveling. We traveled, like, I think 32 hours in the first day of traveling from here to there, stopping in cities. There's the truck with all of us in it. And when we got to the place we were going to, it was an orphan rescue unit. And the reason they have these rescue units is because there's not nearly enough money to build orphanages for all the kids, because they built an orphanage for every orphan in southern Africa, there would be 800,000 orphanages. So they can't really build a full-blown orphanage. There's just not the money for it. So they build these rescue units where the kids can sort of just come, they get a meal a week, and they can hang out. So I guess just stay away from all the alcohol that's there, because there's a lot of it, because there's not much else to do there besides alcohol, and try to get as much money as you can from doing various things, selling things, growing maize, which is corn, was one of their biggest things. So the rescue unit was there sort of just to be a place for the kids to come when the older kids were at school. So that was kind of cool. We got there the first day and immediately started playing with all the kids. They know some words in English. They know give me, which is a big one. Give me money, give me socks, give me shoes, give me shirt. And so that was a huge, it's kind of sad when you get there and like the first, you get off the truck, you walk over and some kid says, give me your socks. And you're like, can I? Am I allowed to? It was an interesting experience. And they also know yes and no is their other one. There was a kid, Godfrey, who was up here somewhere. And you would ask him anything. It didn't even have to be a question. And he would say yes or no. So we had fun with that. Asked him a lot of random questions. Are you an underwater basket weaver? Yes. Do you like to play the harmonica while eating mac and cheese? No. No. So he had no idea what we were talking about, but we had fun anyway. So as we sort of rested in, got all of our things ready, we started building the bridge, which was an interesting task because it's not like building a bridge here. We had two hammers, a couple shovels, and a handheld drill. Oh, and we had some saws, too, which broke every once in a while, as did the drill bits, too. So we had a lot of fun with that. We got all the poles dug. We had to lay a footer, which is in here, in the mud, which doesn't work well when you're trying to pour concrete into mud and sliding out the bottom, and you got to box everything in. So that was an interesting task. It's hard, but you know, it was a good experience, you know, trying to deal with things like that. And so we dealt with a lot of other, had a lot of random things happen while we were building the bridge. There's a couple pictures here of the bushfires, which were started. And it's not because it's hot that there's these bushfires. It's because the village people light them so they can, for three reasons. They can kill off underbrush so that they try to keep them sort of in handle so they can, like, just burn a section. But it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes they just go wild. So they would kill underbrush, chase the rats out of their homes so they could catch them and eat them, and hunt for these little Ntungulu fruits, which are, there's a picture of one of the kids eating them here. A little red onion-type fruit grows like an onion just below the ground. It's got a stalk that comes up, but the stalk is brown, and so is the rest of the grass. So they're sort of hard to find. So they would burn the fires so you could see the red top of the Ntungulu and go and catch them. And we went hunting with a bunch of the orphans, and they could find them, and you never could. You were like, oh, they burned the fires so you can see the red, and you can't see the red. They can, though. I guess it's just years of experience. So we had a lot of fun with that, and we finished the bridge in, like, it took us 2 weeks, but we only did, like, 7 days of work because of all the breaking tools, trucks not working, having to get wood, which we couldn't get, and a lot of things that held us back. But we finished it and had fun just being there because we had a couple extra days, and had a lot of fun at the church, which there's a couple pictures of the church band up there and them playing for the church, and it was just a lot of fun to see how they worship because it's a lot different from the worship we have here. There's a lot of dancing involved. There's a lot of singing and dancing, and all of their when they do songs, they have their choir, and their choir is never just standing still. Their choir is always moving, going in circles, dancing around, having fun, and it was just fun to be there with them. It was also kind of interesting because we went there knowing that most of the kids here were orphaned by AIDS, but it didn't really hit us that AIDS was a big thing until we got there and there are 300 orphans and you've only seen 10 grown-ups and you've been here for 2 weeks. And you're just like, wait, where are they all? They're all back at home? So when you go walking through the village, I mean, you see a couple more, but it's still weird when most, like, 90% of the people are above 65 or below 17. And you just walk around, and after a while, it became normal. I mean, there was just no middle-aged people. The only middle-aged people that we really were there with were the pastor and his wife, the leader of the choir and band and his wife, and then there was a couple of the lady who owned the land, and then a couple of the men who were the farmers who would farm and bring in most of the money. So that was sort of an interesting thing, being there and just not being in contact with older people. It was like, it was just, you wouldn't realize how different it is until you're there, and there is just no older people there to talk to. Most of them are younger. But so towards the last days, we sort of, it was hard saying goodbye to, you know, all the orphans that you had come to know and love. My little guy Kenny is up here at least three times, the little kid with the hard hat, and me and him just had a lot of fun. You know, a lot of the kids became a little attached to one. I know a lot of the people cried as we left, but it was hard. When we got out of there, we had a lot more driving to do in the trucks, a lot of breaking down and push starting them, and got all the way down to Livingston and got to go see Victoria Falls, which you've all seen pictures of, which was an amazing thing to do. It was a great way to end it off. And we got to go on the safari, saw a lot of animals, saw the kudu, the giraffe, elephant, a lot of zebras. There was a lot of zebras. And then the white rhino, which is not actually white. It's just calm. And so, yeah, like, we got up there, and they're like, this is the last white rhino. And we're like, whoa, white rhino. And we go up, and it's a rhino. And there was nothing special about it, except you could get close to it because it was so calm it wouldn't charge you or try to attack you. And they said that they have an armed guard on the white rhino 24/7 because he's the last white rhino in Zambia. So they've got some guy standing out there holding an AK-47 24/7. And he just stands out there. And they also said that the nothing gets near within like a mile of or a quarter mile of the white rhino because it's just so big. None of the elephants, none of the zebras, none of the hippos come near the thing. It's got like a quarter mile where you can just walk and you won't see anything. And then you get out of that quarter mile radius and there's tons of animals. It's just kind of weird. But yeah, that was mostly it. We sort of ended out the trip buying souvenirs, haggling with the Zambian people there because they know you're white, so they raise the price up around 200,000, which is like $40 here. They had an interesting money. It was 5,000 to the dollar, so a Coke was around 6 in the city, 2 in the bush, and you were buying like dinner for 60,000, which was it was weird at first when you get there and you're like, how much money did you get? Oh, I got 1,700,000 kwacha, and you're like, dude. And then we were talking with the Bible students at one of the places we stayed, and we're asking them like, how much is stuff? And they're like, cars are around 9 million. And a BlackBerry is around 6 million. It was like, what in the world? I mean, they had a lot of things. Like, Cokes were their average price. They were, a dollar was a Coke, pretty much. 5,000 was the average. But then things like headphones, when we were there, were at least $30 a pair for, like, the cheap kinds. They were 500,000, which was, it was interesting just having to deal with that. But that was about it. We rounded off the trip haggling people. Had a lot of fun. We were actually there with another team, Orphan Angels, who was a motorcycle team that ran around and did motorcycles and went to Sunday schools that you couldn't reach and would preach there. And we spent a lot of time traveling with them, which was fun. So there's the Intungulu fruit, if you were wondering. Kind of an interesting little thing. But so that's about it. If you guys have any questions, I've got answers. So. Most of them are mine. A couple of them I stole from friends, but almost all of these are mine. I think that was one of our leaders, but I also have another one that I took somewhere. It just didn't get in. Yes. Yeah.
How has this changed?
How has this changed you? It changed me a lot, I would say. It definitely opens your eyes to what's out there, and you have to, my big thing was relying on God to sort of take care of me, because a lot of things didn't go well. My sleeping bag got left in Florida, and I was like, oh gosh, what am I going to do, and sort of just had to like rely on God to figure things out when I got there, and turns out another girl had insufficient sleeping stuff, so me and her went and bought blankets at some market for cheap, so it all worked out, and it was just, having to rely on him was something that really was different. Also, high fructose corn syrup. Once you go and you drink Coke with sugar in it for 2 months and you get back, can't stand this stuff. Just coats your mouth and it's all gross. I don't get it. I didn't think it would be that big of a deal. When I got back and had a Coke at a Subway, I was just like, what in the world is this? And I had to throw it away. It was disgusting. Yes, we were in tents all the entire time. It was two people in a 7 by 7 foot tent, which was an interesting thing to deal with. You being 6'3" in a 7 foot tent and having your stuff at the top of the tent and having a mosquito net between you and the 30-degree weather was. Sometimes I wore 7 pairs of socks at night because it was just it was complicated in the tents. Trying to fit everything in. I did get to see the waterfall. It was huge. We got right up on top of it, sort of.
You've been on a real waterfall?
Me too. That is really cool. With your grandma? That's awesome. Okay. That is real. There is actually, when you walk onto the bridge, they have a bridge on the other side, and you can walk onto it, and you get to the other side of the bridge, and you look back, and there's a complete circle double rainbow going all the way around the bridge and connecting at the bottom. It was really hard to take pictures of, but I sort of got it. I mean, besides high fructose corn syrup and Coke, I think it was bringing toilet paper into the bathroom, honestly. Like, I thought about it, and I was like, it wasn't too big of a change coming back. But I brought toilet paper everywhere I went in Zambia, because you go anywhere, and you go to a public bathroom, and there's no toilet paper. You pay to go to a bathroom, and there's no toilet paper. So you brought it everywhere with you, and I'm still bringing it in it. The middle of the night, going to the bathroom and bringing a roll of toilet paper with me and realizing there's another one already there. And I'm just like, oh. Not with teen missions, but I would definitely go back to Zambia. Yes. I got it back when we were in Florida and brought it, I gave it to the missionary barrel, which is for missionaries, but yeah. I didn't bring anything back. I gave everything away. I came back with one backpack and left with 40 pounds, so that was kind of cool. You have one?
What's your impression of the
Zambian
Christians?
Of the Zambian Christians? I think the biggest thing was they have way more faith than the average Christian here. I'm not dissing any of you, but we get sick. Someone in the family gets sick, and you go to a doctor, and you're done. Someone in the family in Zambia gets sick, and the only thing you can do is pray, because there's no medical help, there's no nothing. Someone in the family gets a cut, and you just have to pray that it doesn't get infected, because there's nothing they can really do. So they have extreme amounts. They rely on God for way more than you would ever think. Like riding a bike to the village, they have to pray about that and have faith. Like one of the guys was telling us that he has to pray. He prays the entire road to the village on his bike because so much can happen. Flat tire would just ruin him. They carry their 250-pound bags of maize, which is corn. They'd carry at least five of them on their bikes, which is like a couple thousand pounds on one bike, plus a guy trying to bike this thing 8 kilometers on a dirt road. So they relied on faith for a lot of things, which was a lot. It was really cool to see. Running out of time. All right. It was great to talk to all of you.